Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta. What do you call a book that's a little bit biography and a little bit memoir? A biomoir? Or how about a mammography? I think I like mammography more than biomoir. Biomoir sounds too much like some kind of fragrance, doesn't it?
Biomoir, the fragrance for the environmentally responsible man who's not afraid of being a little irresponsible after dark.
The reason I'm wondering about this is because the visionary movie director David Lynch and the critic journalist Christine McKenna have collaborated on a unique hybrid that combines elements of biography and memoir. It's called Room to Dream, and it explores David Lynch's life and career. Lynch started out as a painter, but in early 1967, he decided to pursue a career as a filmmaker.
He was in a studio at the Philadelphia Academy of Fine Arts in Philadelphia. Oh, it was the Pennsylvania Academy. And he was working on a painting of a figure standing in green foliage, dark green foliage. And he says he heard and felt a little wind, and he detected some movement in the painting. And at that point, he thought, oh, a moving painting. And that's when he started moving towards film. And he immediately made a piece called Six Men Getting Sick, which is a short film projected onto a sculpted screen. So he kind of eased out of fine art making into film gently.
Mm-hmm. So this idea of moving paintings, as you mentioned, was a huge turning point because then David turned his attention to making films. And his debut feature film was Eraserhead, which was released in 1977. What did you think of Eraserhead the first time you saw it?
The first time I saw Eraserhead, I didn't know what I was looking at. Most people, I think, respond that way. But it's very powerful, and it's very seductive because it's so beautiful. It looks like it's on velvet or something.
Yeah.
It's a black and white film, of course. And first I was pulled in just by the beauty and the humor, because there are parts of it that are very funny. But as I became more familiar with the film, I think it's a deeply spiritual film. David says that too.
Yeah, so for those listeners who aren't familiar with Eraserhead, this is a tough question, but I know you can answer it. Can you kind of give us a brief synopsis of the film's storyline?
It's the story of Henry Spencer, who gets a girl named Mary X pregnant, and she gives birth to a deformed infant and abandons Henry with the infant, and the infant then dies. And along the way, Henry has kind of an erotic awakening with a neighbor. And through very complicated means, there's a very kind of miraculous ending, and it ends on a happy note.
Eraserhead is really, it seems, all about the mood. There's very little dialogue. The film strikes me as kind of the cinematic equivalent of a tone poem. And so much of the mood is conveyed through the soundtrack that David and Alan Splett worked so hard to create. Can you talk about the role that the soundtrack plays in Eraserhead?
Alan Splett was hugely important to David in helping him develop his ability to design sound. Alan was a real genius. They met in Philadelphia, and they kind of invented their own ways to make sound effects, because David always has such specific things, ideas in his mind when he does something. They couldn't find any recorded sound effects that matched what he needed. So he worked closely with Alan up until Blue Velvet, which Alan left because he said he couldn't work on it. It made him sick. There's a lot of like distant train whistles and barking dogs and insects, and he's very good at harvesting sound.
Yes, very much so, and marrying it so well to images.
Shortly after I started meditating, I would always do these little drawings in the food room. And one day I started drawing this little woman. And I'm drawing along, and I'm looking at this drawing, and this woman came to life in my mind. And I realized that this woman lived in Eraserhead, and that this woman lived inside the radiator.
You got your good things now.
you say that David's time in Philadelphia was such a contrast to his childhood, that these two experiences, his childhood and his time in Philadelphia, they combined to become one of the most enduring themes of his art. Can you explain that?
David's work is all about dualities. He had a very bucolic, nature-filled childhood with camping trips and in the country, and his father worked in a forest. And then he came to Philadelphia, which in the 60s was really a mess. The city was kind of bankrupt. They'd had race riots there. It was very violent. It was completely the opposite of anything he'd ever experienced. So those two worlds collided, and we got David Lynch.
Yeah. In much the same way that Franz Kafka's name has morphed into this adjective, Kafkaesque, David Lynch's work has spawned the word Lynchian. And in his book about David, Dennis Lim says that the paradox of the Lynchian sensibility is that it is at once easy to recognize and hard to define. In light of that, how would you define Lynchian?
Oh, gee, that's a really tough question. I'm sure really obsessive David Lynch fans notice there's a portrait of Franz Kafka on the wall in Gordon Cole's office, the FBI agent in the Twin Peaks The Return. On the surface, Lynchian is funny because there's an element of the surreal to things that are Lynchian. But the deepest, most important part of Lynchian is beauty and embracing things that at a glance might be dismissed as ugly, seeing them as beautiful and presenting them that way. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Lynch is not afraid to follow his muse to the outskirts of his imagination and explore the weirdest ideas that he can think of. Why do you think he's able to do that?
He can go where he wants because he doesn't care what other people think. He's not afraid of poverty. He was very poor when he was a young artist coming up, and as long as he was able to make his work, that was fine. He's never been a slave to money, and so that gives him a lot of creative freedom.
Yeah, I suspect that this devil-may-care attitude may have something to do with what Nick Toscious said in his biography of Dean Martin. He said that Dean Martin had mene frigissimo, which is Italian for I don't give an F.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great book. And David's muse and his visions are so precise and strong to him, it's like he doesn't have a choice. He has to execute these things the way he sees them in his head and, you know, full steam ahead.
And lucky for us that he does that, because we're the beneficiaries of that to be able to enjoy his art.
Yes.
David Lynch's fourth feature film is Blue Velvet, which was released in 1986. What did you think of Blue Velvet the first time you saw it?
I was totally knocked out by Blue Velvet. I loved it from the start. I had the great good fortune to be on the set of that film. To me, it was the sequel to Eraserhead. Dune and The Elephant Man were strange little kinds of forks in the road for David. They weren't really conventional David projects, but Blue Velvet was really building on the promise of Eraserhead to me and going deeper, and I just loved it.
For those of our listeners who aren't familiar with Blue Velvet, can you give us kind of a brief summary of what happens in Blue Velvet?
Blue Velvet is the story of Jeffrey Beaumont, a college student whose father suffers a heart attack, so he comes home from school to a small town where they live, Lumberton. And he finds a severed ear in a field and takes it to the police and starts delving deeper into the mystery of what caused this ear to end up in a field. And along the way, he has an erotic awakening, kind of not unlike Henry Spencer's. Jeffrey Beaumont is kind of like when David got to Philadelphia. He was this wide-eyed boy who suddenly is confronted with the violence and ugliness in the world, and that's kind of the story.
That's very well said, and I love what you mentioned a moment ago, that in many ways Blue Velvet is kind of a sequel to Eraserhead. Blue Velvet was very controversial when it was released, and film critic Roger Ebert was especially upset. What did he say about it?
He felt it was very misogynistic, and I can't remember his exact quote, but it was something along the lines of, if a director asks Isabella Rossellini to go through what she has to go through in this film, he should at least put her in a film that's worth it, and David did not. Yeah, he was very incensed. I think because Isabella is very vulnerable in it, and she shows her body in a way that's not contextualized as this is a beautiful woman's body. It's an image of abuse in the film.
Yeah, yeah. And yet film critic David Thompson, who just recently, within the last few days, wrote a review of your book in which he said that Blue Velvet is a work of American art to be considered in the same league as Charles Ives' work, Edward Hopper, and William Faulkner's.
I know. I loved that review, and I loved that comment, and I agree with him completely.
Alan Splett, the audio genius we were talking about earlier, he worked with David on Blue Velvet, and together they created this very innovative audioscape we were talking a bit about earlier in the context of Eraserhead. David's and Alan's remarkable ability to marry sound and images. Can you give me a few examples of their creative sound design in Blue Velvet?
There's a love scene between Kyle MacLachlan and Isabella, and the sound to that is like screeching metal that kind of merges into the roar of a lion. It's very dark and sinister and frightening. Most of the sounds are kind of that way. There's another, when we first see the ear in the field, the camera travels into the ear and goes deeper and deeper into the darkness in the ear. And there's kind of like a deep wind that just gets broader and deeper the deeper you go into the ear. It's very beautiful.
Can you talk a bit about the working relationship between David Lynch and his longtime music composer, Angelo Badalamenti?
Well, it was kismet when they met. Most people know how Angelo came into David's life. Isabella had to deliver a rendition of Blue Velvet in the film, and she was having a hard time singing it, so the producer of the film, Fred Caruso, brought his friend Angelo Badalamenti down from New York. And Angelo, through his great patience and sensitivity, managed to get an incredible performance out of Isabella, and the first just practice take that they put down on tape, David ended up using in the film.
She
the opening titles of the film, originally he had Shostakovich playing, and David said to Angelo, "Can you give me that?" And Angelo said, "Well, I can't compose like Shostakovich, but I can give you that quote-unquote Russian sound," which he did. He can kind of do anything. And so David and Angelo write together, and David talks what he's feeling, and Angelo plays music on a keyboard as David's talking, and that's how they've created their music.
David breathed new life into his 1990 TV series, Twin Peaks, with co-creator Mark Frost, with this third season, long-awaited third season that aired on Showtime last year. Why do you think he wanted to return to the Twin Peaks story world?
He was still in love with that town. Those people are very real to him, the Palmers, and they're like real people to him, and he wasn't done with that world. That's why he did Fire Walk With Me after the second season of Twin Peaks ended. As he said, he wasn't ready to leave that world. And he's never abandoned those characters. They've remained alive in his mind to him, and so he had more to say about it. I mean, if all the stars lined up right, I wouldn't be surprised if he did more, but I know right now he's very involved in painting, and that's what he wants to do, so I don't think it's going to happen this year.
And the feeling in my head is that this day in front of me is like there's a gorge, a gigantic canyon, like the Grand Canyon. And there's a very, very delicate glass bridge that goes from this side to the other side. And that represents the work that needs to be done. You get to the location or the set, and it's a big process. It's a big machine that needs to move forward.
Got a light? Got a light? Got a light?
Christine McKenna is the co-author, along with David Lynch, of the biography memoir, Room to Dream. Find out more at wpr.org /beta.
Not a light.